Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
How did you approach that final round? Because we were trying to figure out as well as a team, like what to expect from you.
Well, first of all, I was finally happy that I threw away my burden of leadership. Yeah, first time in 40 rounds.
If I don't repeat, probably I lose, which in this situation, I guess, doesn't make a difference for me. But maybe if I lose this game, I even get like murdered on my way out of the plane hole.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the C-Squared Podcast. In today's episode, we have a very special guest, a legend in the chess world right now, a contemporary legend in the chess world, two times challenger for the World Championship match, two times winner of the candidates, and he was also close to winning the third time as well. We have Jan Nepomniachtchi with us. Jan, hopefully I pronounced your name half right. I mean, it's never easy, but yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Christian, it was very, very flattering to listen to such a, you know, such a warm welcome.
That was a very short, warm welcome. I could have made it much longer.
Warm, okay, doesn't matter, but again, I'm very great to be here. Hello, everyone.
Yeah. And this podcast is recorded not long after the conclusion of the candidates. And I think this is probably the best place to start. I don't know exactly where our conversation will go, but I think it is the best place to start. We need to talk about the candidates. That crucial final round. Obviously, everybody has seen the clips of those final moments. It was an incredible tense sports moment for both of you, surely something that will live in chess history. But I want to start the conversation with you, Jan, and the crucial 13th round, because you played Hikaru. You were in a great position. You were leading the tournament alongside Gukesh and Hikaru, I think, at that point. How did you approach that game? Do you have any thoughts about that game, any remorse that you weren't able to, let's say, convert your opening advantage in that one?
Yeah, so first of all, I think not like the main thing I'm trying to do in candidates is like the risk management. But somehow, okay, when I felt like, okay, I should win at all costs against Vidit in round, whatever it was, like 11, it could, you know, it could backfire a lot. So this game, okay, I ended up winning, but I not anything like proud of it. It was quite poor game for both of us. I mean, like if we if check it. So well, first of all, I can only influence on my own game, so I can't come and like say, come on, Reza, make some good moves. Come on, yeah, like come on, Prague, yeah, and so on. So I just thought like it will be way more challenging in the opening. And of course, I didn't expect myself to get such a great position, though I wasn't sure because okay, Hikaru plays a lot of murky lines lately. And I would expect some random Ruy Lopez from him, but this one is just, I don't know. It was a bit ridiculous because this is just very bad. I mean, it seemed to me at least. And at some point, like I don't think I really understood how good my position was. I really liked it, but okay, he played queen d8 sort of quickly, and I mean, then after queen d8, of course, like I have lots of normal moves.
But I remember your reaction to that move, queen to d8. You were kind of taken aback.
Yeah, this move was sure didn't consider. Okay, maybe the move is not so bad, especially considering how the game went, and maybe that's why okay he played it so quickly. Then I didn't even consider d5 because okay, queen was just there on d5. Okay, wow, d5 was such a good move, but I don't think I really calculated it. So I had like some other moves, like which are, I think it related more or less as good as d5, but somehow I felt like, wow, if I play slowly, then okay, he equalizes slowly as well. So we all know how Hikaru, how good is he at defending, and he's very resourceful. But yeah, unfortunately, I played like a sequence of took like two very very questionable decisions, and yeah, basically in Toulouse it was already like more or less equal. Yeah. And I also started missing things like, okay, I missed queen g5, and I sort of decided not to go to the lines I calculated. And obviously, okay, maybe the you know, the game indicated a little as well that I got tired closer to the finish. But yes, of course, comparing to other games I had, it was quite a big chance, but alas. But also I thought like, all right, like, if I lose, okay, then okay, basically I'm out of competition immediately. So of course, like, the position I achieved is nearly impossible to lose, though I tried a little, yeah, like, so he got some play, like, bishop b7, queen g5. but still, and also, I sort of, like, was not, like, very optimistic, but I knew, like, if the game goes normally, like, the last round game, I think we both would have some chances. The game didn't went anything like normal for me, but yeah, I felt like anyway, like it's not a game. Okay, I can never be winning the last round. So basically, you keep some chances till the end. But I mean, of course, in hindsight, it was a crucial moment. But as far as I remember, at the moment, I agreed for a draw. Like, Firuja was slightly better. At least it seemed to me that okay, he's out of any risks, and Prague. Already gave away an exchange or something, but somehow I found his position not that obviously lost. So I thought, okay, maybe this is still playable. So it's not like the draw would really favor me, especially considering the opening, but it would, as a, in my view, it was sort of like keeping some status quo.
Fabi, how was go ahead.
I just, like, if Alireza and Gukesh had drawn that game, then it would be maybe a weird situation, but not a very abnormal one, where, like, you can predict maybe two draws and a huge playoff. And, okay, huge playoff, of course nobody has big chances. Like, let's say we all have 25% or whatever. But anyway, it's a normal situation, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, from that, of course, it's just a kind of disaster for everyone besides Gukesh that he beat Alireza from that position. And then it makes it, the whole thing, like, more or less, not impossible, but very... very difficult for Hikaru. Of course, he has to win. For you, I think for me, I had the easiest because at least I had white pieces. But to win with black on demand from that situation is pretty nasty last round.
But yeah. How did you see it before the game started? How did you see the game between Gukesh and Alireza before the game started in round 13? Did you feel like Gukesh with the white pieces? Obviously, Alireza was having a pretty rough event. Did you feel like he was in that mental state where he's almost given up on the tournament and will make, you know, certain mistakes at critical junctures? Or how did you see that game play out?
Yeah, I'll start. Yeah, maybe. So, you know, all what was happening in the playing call and, you know, a little bit outside of the playing call, also some drama with Alireza's father, yeah, who had some, you know, controversy there with
but that was in previous rounds.
Everything, yeah, I know. But okay, I felt like okay, Alireza a little bit, you know, not like gave up on the tournament. I think in fact he played quite a good game against Gukesh. Mm-hmm. He's okay because I analyzed this game. Okay, I was like very curious, like what's like the secret of the success? And I would say his first major mistake was whatever, like King H8 after the time control. But I would say he also played quite a good game, okay, very tense, but quite a decent game against Hikaru with a lot of ups and downs. And I can't say like he was like throwing games. He tried, but of course, he played till the result, I guess, every game. So, I discussed this with my team. So, like, what should I do? Like, okay, Alireza, is he going to, you know, take some extra risk again and so on and so on? And they like simply said, okay, but you shouldn't think about it because you can't influence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I think this is very like correct approach. Mm-hmm. Then it came to the playing call and they saw E4, E5 and then Berlin. Then, okay, I was sort of like delighted. Okay. Wow. Alireza finally is back. So no more French, no more Sicilian Rouser, like 10 moves, 12 moves, like Queen F2 and so on. And, I was like relatively optimistic at that point about him, like playing this game.
Fabi, how about yourself?
I thought that's sort of what would happen. Okay, for me, it wasn't even a consideration. Like, I didn't care. I more or less had to keep some chances, because even if everyone draws, I still should keep some chances, right? To at least play for a win. But I wasn't too surprised, because like 2 years ago, when, okay, already the tournament was over and you were clearly winning and nobody else could catch you, and some guys were still thinking about second place. And as we saw, that mattered. But like, for example, in the last round, I was playing Ali Reza, and he had already gotten over all his tilt, and he played Berlin. So once he no longer has like any hopes to win the tournament, and he gets over his tilt, then he's playing like principled openings. I mean, he only had this like one throw, which was against Vidit. Yeah, this was like,
yeah, everything else was fighting. I think he's a great player, yes, with some great openings.
No, this game was more or less, yeah, it was a bit up and down. Okay, I think this queen g6 was a really unfortunate decision, but yeah, also played rather quickly. That was a strange moment, because the end game really doesn't look very fun for black.
Yeah, I think at that point, okay, I checked, like maybe I was following the game live, and I think the first line for white was something like queen h6. And then some weak comp, like maybe on Lee Chess, also suggested queen g6 as to play against queen h6. And maybe he just decided to play by, you know, analog. But I mean, at this point, it's already nothing but some pleasant position. Just a very pleasant position for white. And all right, there is like knight e6, queen f5, queen g7, some weird line. But even then, after queen e5, it's, you know, it's uneasy to profit. Okay, black is doing fine, like even in analysis. Okay, of course it's zeros, but okay, some zeros not for a human's brain, I guess.
Yeah,
it's some serious suffering there. Also, there's like some moves you have to consider, like knight g4 after queen g7, I think.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
So that round finishes, and I remember seeing you coming back to the hotel. You look pretty dejected. Obviously, because Gukesh has won, Gukesh has became the new sole leader, and the situation was pretty rough, right? You were playing black against Fabi. Fabi was in a must-win. You were in a must-win. Hikaru was in a must-win situation. Absolutely insane, insane final round. How did you approach that final round? Because we were trying to figure out as well as a team, like what to expect from you. How did you approach the final round?
Well, first of all, I was finally happy that I threw away my burden of leadership. Yeah, first time in 40 rounds.
Yes.
So I was 40 rounds, I'm a leading candidate, and now finally, okay, I can...
Was that a weight off your shoulders, or like more psychological blow?
I'm kidding. Of course, I was like extremely pissed, like with what I saw. Like, I also like had some hopes, and you know, I even wasn't sure, like... Because I think Gukesh won his game, and then okay, Fabi, you were still playing. I think your game was a bit longer, mm-hmm. and we like were following the game, and I thought, okay, well, maybe I should root for Fabi, because okay, if he doesn't win this, then he has no chances for tomorrow, and perhaps okay, he won't push too hard. Yeah, so I thought like, all right, like surely first of all, Fabi should get +3. And that's how the first thing for me to have some chances with black, that was my consideration. And then I felt extremely stupid when you played d4, because I checked your games, and I checked your games in, you know, in which you're you know sort of supposed to play for a win only, and it's not like there is some I mean, still sometimes you play d4, but I noticed there is a lot of d4 games and a lot of like Nimso, because Nimso is very playable. Okay, and like let's say Petrov, if you put me on Petrov, then d4 of course is a better try. And in the evening, I had like a feeling that all right, we'll play d4, but okay, I was a bit of annoyed, and I decided like to go to bed early, you know, to keep some energy. And I discussed it with the team briefly, and I said, okay, but d4 is very likely. And in the morning, I woke up and got some well-argumented answer that, okay, e4 is the move to expect. Well, and probably you shouldn't prepare both e4 and d4, and you should focus on e4 and so on and so on. Who am I? Like, I'm like a simple peasant. So I decided to follow like the advice of wise people. So I focused on E4, unfortunately.
Do you want to tell us who the wise people were, or you want to keep on the wraps?
Of course.
I assume Jan was one
Gusti,
of them.
Gusti was there, yeah, like Gustafsson. And also, basically, okay, Nikita was on, you know.
Remote.
Yeah, on the remote, and also Maxim Otlakov was on remote too. So,
okay.
Yeah, small adjustments comparing to what I had like for the match, but yeah, the Nikita is still there.
Very
so
strong team.
I think it was like perfectly reasonable what they said, and I think like it was basically a coin flip for me. So to be honest, one of many coin flips like this I lost during the tournament. Yeah, like a lot of, let's say, two openings, and I guess incorrectly, I guess it wrong. Then I came, okay, I had this idea. Maybe I expected Catalan more, to be honest, like for a long game and so on. But you came from, when I went from IMSO, and I had this idea to get a fighting game. But it was not like, of course, not the type of position I wanted to get against you. But what done is done. But of course, it would be better, you know, to at least briefly repeat files before playing the line, you know, first time in 3 years or something.
Fabi, do you remember when we decided to play d4, when we made that decision?
Yeah, it was, well, the first thought was like, okay, if I play e4, well, either you'll play your normal repertoire, or you'll play the knight orf. It, to me, it didn't really make sense to play other openings, because, okay, you do play the knight orf on occasion, and back in the day, you were like a big knight orf guy, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, okay, you play the knight orf, yeah, this is one option, then maybe it's not a bad option for me. But if you play the Petrov, like, yeah, of course, white can try, but like, how much do I want to provoke, and where would I try? And then, okay, Grigori had this idea, like, why don't you play d4? It's going to be unexpected. You didn't play it a single time in this tournament, and you didn't even show any intention at all to play d4. And basically, like, if you were not in must win, then I maybe wouldn't choose this approach. But since you were also in a must win, I thought like d4 is a bit more provocative. Like, you can choose something. We weren't quite sure, like, maybe that you wouldn't play bishop b4, but that you would play c6, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like that you would get some kind of Carlsbad, and we would have a long game, and this is maybe not a bad outcome for either one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, I don't know if it's provocative, but just saying, okay, let's play some kind of long position now that we go into heavy theory. And okay, Nimzo, yeah, Nimzo is also not terrible, because you kind of play a long game. Of course, black is fine everywhere, but what to do? And we briefly considered this bishop b4. Like, basically, all I knew was I'll play queen c2, h5, f3, and okay, that's it. And because it was like one of only bunch of things that you could have done. Yeah, it was like, okay, Carlsbad, or you play Nimzo, or you play even something very provocative, maybe like King's Indian, but or Grunfeld, of course. I mean, it used to be, so there was like a bunch of things to consider, and felt a little bit stretched thin, but this was like one of the things, at least I had my game plan, which was a good start.
But the thing is, every single round it just feels like you need to prepare the whole chess. Yeah. For
I also somehow thought that, okay, my main hope is you, because you will like push hard for a win, and maybe, okay, I should, because let's say, well, again, in hindsight, like, I felt like basically if we got some normal like equalish position, I can like sort of like blackmail you with the draw all the time. Yeah, like I think Sasha explained the same when he was playing Giri in the Candidates in Yekaterinburg. So like, I just blackmailed him with a draw, and he played a bit murky line in the Queen's Indian, and got into trouble. And okay, Sasha went on winning, so basically secured the first place.
Point, Sasha didn't need to win, which was very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. Sasha, of course, didn't need to win, but okay, of course, yeah. it's very easy when you don't need anything. But when,
yeah, that was a big point of discussion. Like, how much do you blackmail the other person with a draw? Yeah.
as much as possible,
you know.
I think game theory would say that you should play the Petrov, for example, that you should like play basically decent openings and not be the first one to provoke.
No, I think it's a mistake to think that Petrov is like a drawish opening. I mean, okay, some forcing line and draws, but there is like plenty of lines for both colors to keep, like, I mean, it's symmetrical structure, but that's I think that's it.
Yeah,
otherwise it's not happening.
We've seen a lot of exchange Frenches, yeah, happening in this candidate. So,
and no, but if you want to make a dragon nowadays, petrol, then you wouldn't choose exchange French. You would go for like the deep theory. Yeah, I mean, you would just like play main lines if you. But of course, I would not want to draw, and so it was just a weird situation. I think it kind of fucked up our play at the start. Like f4, I think was a bit of a maybe not great decision by me, and then your reaction.
No, but f4 was like brilliant practically because I played some. I think I prepared this a little for the first round at least. Yeah, this on this system, but then I mean, I think I never checked f4 deep because okay, it's not like typical of the position. Of course, you normally want to go e4 first. Yeah, and also okay, f4 was not a problem by itself, but somehow like I was in my calculations after I played queen e7, I only was focusing on rook d2 e1. And e4 like threw me to complete panic. Wow, okay, I missed such a simple move. And I just did all the same which I wanted to do after d2 e1 with a tempi down, which basically, I mean, the position was fine. I mean, okay, at least according to a computer, it's very complex. Okay, black takes some risk, but it's zeros. And it's like, okay, basically when you play bishop b4, you're sort of agreeing of playing some risky positions with, maybe white's task is a bit easier because, okay, white has some more normal development. And they didn't lose time for h5, g5 stuff. And okay, you play in the center and you're opening up lines against my king. So that's very natural, yeah? And okay, after e4, I guess, okay, I lost. Was the first moment I lost the control, but it was already enough for you to take over and, you know, to... I mean, basically, until some moment, you played like a more or less impeccable game.
Yeah.
I think there was this like helpful moment where, like, okay, you went for the stuff bishop c3, bishop f3, and then bishop e4. And at first, I thought like, what are you doing? Because like after bishop takes e4, I thought okay, g takes f4, some rook e1 or something, I win. And if you castle along, okay, d5, and looks like that disaster for black. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that like this rook d1 actually doesn't matter at all. When you were thinking about g takes f4. And then I was thinking, okay, d5, but queen c5 somehow doesn't, like, looks a bit dangerous. And then I was thinking some queen a5 just to stop you from castling. But then, okay, doesn't really work. And finally, like, I realized that g4, h4, and then this king b1 is, like, preparing d5. And it's maybe, at least it's, like, totally safe for white and dangerous for black. So it felt like ideal solution. Because I was already thinking, like, I might be close to getting a big advantage here.
But that I think was a big difference. So basically, after I took on c3 and f3, I mean, of course, I considered some other move orders, but every time I was calculating like a lot of bad options. I mean, okay, a lot of options which lead to more or less the same bad positions in different move orders, and I just was completely lost in my calculations. So like, how do I, like, my only question was how don't I lose immediately? I wasn't sure because, okay, also this inclusion g4, h4, I mean, okay, to, you know, calculate all these lines again was a bit painful. I mean, it wasn't a real choice. And at some point, okay, I don't know exactly why did I go for castle instead of h4, but somehow, okay, I had this, okay, castle as a reserve option if nothing else works. And okay, I go castle 9c5 and then just hope for the best. But there was... As it turned out, there was not much to hope for, yeah, for black.
When did you feel, obviously, the game and the middle game didn't go your way, and towards the end of the first time control, you were completely losing? Where did you feel like you have some chances to come back in the game? And what were your hopes at that point? Because obviously, you were still very much behind. Maybe best if Fabiano doesn't push too much, you're going to make a drop. But when did you feel like you have some chances to maybe even get a victory?
To be honest, my only hope was that Fabi wins the tiebreak. I mean, I had no other hopes at that point. I was quite, I was trying to be, you know, quite candid to myself, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because if it wouldn't be the time control, I would probably, I don't know, like, give up or something because the position is just ugly. But I mean, okay, like, still, like, a few moves to make, and I had some hopes of rook c8, queen c2, tricks, okay, whatever. Some random tactic ideas, which combining with pawn on h2 are very, very nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I sort of felt it's like not beyond savable until I noticed that, okay, there is bishop b5 plus king b1 move sequence. And then, okay, it's suddenly it's just a disaster. Because otherwise, I mean, even like if I checked it with the computer briefly, I mean, if not bishop b5, king b1, of course, like white is massively better, but it's not, I mean, it's not as lost as it was in the game. So I'm pretty much forced into rook takes d1, rook takes d1, rook e8 or something, because my hope was after king b1 to play rook d1, rook d1, rook d8, rook d8, queen d8. Then queen, I felt like queen c5, queen d1, queen c1, takes h3, and I promote. And it was like some trick for, exchanging some pieces and maybe like keeping some hopes. But the problem was you play queen e5 check first, of course. And after king e8.
Seven was also like, I think it's very, very good. After queen d8. Like, I just noticed the c7 after queen takes d8.
C7 is also good. But okay, I firstly calculated queen c5, and then it's all right, there is queen e5. Okay, c7 is more than enough, of course. Normally in such positions, there is more than one way to lose. But then, okay, instead of rook d8, I had rook e8, and maybe it's... I mean, of course lost, but I don't think it's as bad as in the game. Yeah, and then after b6, of course, many moves are good, okay, but rook b7 is just basically killing. I have no counterplay, and okay, you always have this queen c8 idea in many cases. But that's not my only problem, of course. I mean, I could try, instead of somehow rotating my queen to c7, I could try king c7, which would be probably a better chance. But then I felt like you would play like queen takes f4, knight e5, and then rook e1, f6, g5. And I felt like, okay, I will never manage to get rid of this pin. So in some way, I decided to go for another pin with my pawn on h2. But I actually was quite... Okay, the position was hopeless, and I also had not so many hopes. Yeah, besides, all right, like, it's not like anyway we get a result, and anyway, the guy I'm rooting, first I was rooting for myself, and then, of course, I was rooting for you in the tournament. And it was like the only positive moment of the game.
We have to discuss those last final moments of the game as well. Obviously, you also mentioned it on your podcast, which, by the way, I didn't understand much because it's in Russian. I don't speak Russian.
You know, on YouTube, you can switch on subtitles on the preferable language.
Yes. So I've been doing that. But you did mention, the the coin flip thought.
Yeah.
Let's say. But obviously, that was not going to happen. That's not the...
It's probably... In general, but... I mean, okay, we all know this Mislav Hubner yelling.
How serious was that thought, I guess, is my question.
It was... Oh, it was some sort of desperation. I wouldn't say it was more than like 10% of seriousness, but it wasn't completely... a complete joke, so I felt like, all right, I mean, anyway, like a draw is unacceptable for both of us. But I think such things may, you know, maybe they should happen somewhere like behind the curtains if they happen sometimes. But in a serious note, of course, yeah. It was like, I think this all was because of like the unusual key we got in the hotel. Yeah, okay, I've never seen such key. Which like a big coin. So maybe I'm not like a big expert in traveling, but it's like Echo Hotel, one hotel Toronto, and
this is
very special style of everything.
In-house joke. Yeah, nobody with that.
Yeah, and also like during the tournament, hotel. I was also often using this as a poker chip. You know, okay, like as an amateur poker player, I also like to build some towers from chips, and also like having constantly something in your hand, and you know. Rotating it between your fingers.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find an image of that. Fabi, what were your thoughts in those last few moments? Obviously, you knew you spoiled it. Like, what were the emotions at that point?
Well, okay, I basically like felt I'd lost control many times during this game, but then I thought like somehow I was like, okay, it's a miracle. Like f7, and I'm. And knight b3, king b1, I'm winning, which wasn't even true because I missed knight d2. But I thought, okay, knight d2, king c2, like king runs, whatever. And then knight c5, I thought, okay, I have checks, I have a pawn on the seventh rank, and I have a rook. Like, somehow I should win, which was true, but I didn't see the way, which was only one way. And basically, I like repeated it, and then I made this random move, rook e7. And immediately after I played it, I was like, well, what about queen f1? I was like, it's a draw. Yeah, like, immediately hit me. And then when you played queen f1, I was thinking, like, okay, I can't repeat. But if I don't repeat, probably I lose, which in this situation, I guess, doesn't make a difference for me. But maybe if I lose this game, I even get like murdered on my way out of the plane hall by someone. And then I got excited for a second because I saw rookie four and I was like, oh, like some excitement was like, oh, it's like winning for white
Still
for just one
playable,
second.
yes.
No, not playable, but like, oh, rook e4, and I take on e4, and I promote my pawn, and I win. Of course, this h2 pawn, which I failed to capture for like basically 50 moves, was still there, and so this one moment of joy was quickly. But then I had nothing to do. Okay, I played rook e4 with like probably a few seconds on my clock or something. I don't know. And yeah, mostly it was just the anger is, of course, like. I more or less want to resign, not to even look at this position anymore, but and somehow want to win this game, but it's impossible to win the game anymore. So you're just angry at yourself. And
Wait, didn't you win the same or maybe almost the same queen endgame against Maxim Vachele-Graf in the Singfield Cup?
it was a
Well,
bit
it was
different,
without
I think.
the b6 pawn. Ah, so it was it
Two
was without the,
versus
okay.
zero,
I also know it's
yes.
I know it's also a draw, but okay, the b6 pawn it would be a bit more challenging here for black.
Yeah, then I would at least feel like,
Yeah,
okay,
of
50
course, of
50.
course.
Although it is a somehow theoretical
Oh,
draw.
by the way, I was just completely shocked by rook e4 because okay, I thought okay, of course Fabi won't repeat. I was like completely sure you won't repeat, and I didn't see rook e4 resource. So somehow the level of my poor calculation was then whenever okay, I understand like okay, rook c7 is very tempting, and then okay, I felt like well, when you play rook f7 and rook c7 and then f7, your back rank becomes weak, and I didn't see like the mate after queen e8 because okay, I didn't see this queen e8 queen e2 maneuver. It was sort of, I mean, even now like it's not obvious for me like without a computer what would happen after b5, but okay, whatever. And probably something happened, something quite easy.
Yeah, it's rook c6, and then I think
Yeah,
like
some.
Grishuk and maybe Shimonov were like looking through, and it
Yeah,
wasn't
like
easy, but
king
queen e6.
b7 maybe, and then rook h6 maybe
Well,
overwrote.
king b7 is queen b5,
Ah,
and
queen
king
b5
a7
check.
is
Okay, okay, okay.
and queen e7, queen e3. It's just like with checks, but then after like king b8, or no, I think at that point it's easy,
Yeah, of
but yeah.
course, of course. Okay, if you can't help the construction with knight on c5, of course,
Yeah,
queen and
most probably.
rook finish, seal the deal. But I felt okay, well, if not rook e4, okay, then maybe okay, some weird move. I didn't know, just to keep the game going, and then okay, suddenly I have a lot of checks. Yeah, and rook e4, I tried it like many times. Can I start with queen e1 check, then h1 queen? Maybe okay, I can play on somehow, but okay, no. No, knight e4 and yeah.
How do you recover from this type of situation, Sian? Because I mean, this is competition at the highest level. It happens to everybody. How do you personally re recover from this type of moments? You've had a few of them, obviously. The match against Ding, that's the easy one to remember. This one, heartbreaking moment for both of you. How do you recover? You always feel like you're talking to a very resilient guy when I'm talking to you. How do you recover from that?
Well, to be honest, like this particular game, I only got like bloodily lucky, and I mean, which I didn't lose it, and I don't think there is something to recover from, to be honest. Like the tournament itself, yes, it was like very annoying. But that particular game, I was more, of course, I was more, feeling for Fabiano than for myself because, okay, I knew I played badly and okay, I should have lost this, of course. And for me, like, it's very, I mean, always, yeah, for me, it's very important, like, if what's happening and what's happened was logical, or let's say just in some way, or it was like, pretty random and, more hard to explain, yeah. Like, so for example, like matching against Magnus in Dubai was, I mean, yeah, I was quite capable in the first half, and then okay, basically my brain switched off, and because okay, you need to sleep sometimes here, and my brain switched off and I just couldn't play the second half. Okay, I blundered in one move. I didn't see he can play queen g4 check in the last game. Yeah, I only checked e3 takes f2. So it was, at this point, was obvious that, okay, I just can't play chess at whatever decent level. And for example, also like the Ding match was very difficult to digest, yeah, because I had so many chances and like obvious chances, not so obvious chances, yeah, like second half of the match especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, in a way, that was disastrous. But somehow here I felt like, all right, like given the positions I got and like, I think I put maximum effort on and off the board, like I prepared a lot, like physically as well, yeah, like not only chess wise. So I played the Weekend the tournament I absolutely hate just to get some practice. Was good. So I did a lot of things, of course, to perform well, and I felt like, okay, I gave it all, like whatever, like 110%, so maybe slightly less, but surely I wasn't like, it wasn't an easy walk for me. And I felt like, okay, if scoring plus three with no losses, okay, I can't fight for the first place. Okay, that's probably that's deserved, but okay, once again, only game I can regret is the game with Hikaru. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the game white against Abbasov, yeah, okay, it's a bit weird that he played such a great game considering his overall level in the tournament, but yeah, this game he played really nice. So maybe I overestimate the level of problems I put in the game, but for me it was like, wow, I'm winning after bishop b2, okay, all this like big pin on their big diagonal, but in fact it was nothing. Yeah, it was like I was never better, in fact. I mean, like seriously better.
Yeah, one of the things about Abbasov, he can play really good chess.
Yeah,
sometimes he has these moments of lapse when he just makes a mistake and then position collapses, but if he doesn't have those, he can maintain a pretty decent
level. Yeah, correct. So whenever it's just, I sort of, okay, I just try to move on and work on my mistakes. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to add.
What about how just was the match against Ding? Obviously, you said it was a disaster, but you know, yeah. How did you come back from that?
It took some time. So, for example, comparing with another match with Magnus, yeah, okay. So mentally, match with Magnus was not like that difficult because okay, like he played very well,
right?
I mean, not like necessarily very strong, but okay, he didn't make any mistakes, and it was more than enough to beat me. And but match with Ding, okay, whenever when you see like a lot of like scoring chances, like really a lot, and some of them are simple, and like some of them are extremely simple. And
even the final game, right? The final classical game.
Yeah, also even the final classical game. Okay, so but obviously, like at that point, like game 14, you are like very tired, and also when you make a long sequence of draws, you are less, you don't have this roller coaster like winning, losing, then winning again and spoiling a chance and so on. And you're more like, your brain is more calm, more cold. Yeah, it's more controlled. Mm-hmm. But of course, when like a lot of things are happening, it's a bit different. Yeah, so. In a way, it wasn't surprising that, for example, he lost an absolutely normal position on time at one moment. Yeah, this was quite shocking for me as well. This probably happens sometimes under some big pressure.
Yeah.
But overall,
this game, it was a game seven or this, where the French, yeah?
Yeah, the French.
I remember this game. I was watching it. I wasn't commentating at the time because I commentated your match on the second half. But like at some point, Ding just froze. Like the position was kind of complicated, but okay, maybe let's say about equal or about balanced. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he just like freezes in some position and he thinks, I don't know, more or less 90% of his time goes away and the position doesn't become suddenly simpler for him. So he's now playing the same position with seconds. And it was like something at this moment went wrong. I forget exactly which move, but it wasn't something to do with the position. Yeah, it's just like something in his brain, at least for 5 minutes, basically shut off.
Yeah, perhaps. I also had a feeling that okay, he wanted to play this on, maybe rightly so, because he was. I think it was back a bit better for him at that point. But I think he threw on something like h4, and then okay, after I took g takes h4, quickly he tried to find a follow-up, and there was basically no follow-up. It was like equal, so maybe he should have went for a draw. And I think he tried to work on some continuation to keep the game going, and then of course he lost the control after some unfortunate check. Or I don't remember the, you know, the details, but I felt like, okay, at least after h4, g takes h4, okay, my game is like, at least I'm a full exchange up, not like exchange for a pawn and some positional compensation. So I was happy for getting a free pawn and having my couple of next moves. And also, as far as I remember, my rook was on the third rank, and so after gh4, okay, I could also use my rook there.
Yeah, this h, and this was the moment after gh4 that he suddenly spent all his time. Yeah. Although maybe you could say this h4 was the beginning of something a bit wrong, although not objectively, but maybe it's kind of a weird move to play h4 and to give the pawn. And then rook d2, okay, kind of understandable, but to spend all your time was really odd on this move, rook d2.
Yeah. Let's shelf that match for a second, and I'm sure we'll come back to Ding, because we're going to have to discuss the match between Gukesh and Ding. Let's go back to the candidates and discuss the winner's performance. I mean, Gukesh, just an incredible trajectory. Played, I would say, 13 very, very good games. Maybe the loss against Alireza, a bit of a slip-up, but he came back strong after that. How do you see... Were you surprised, first of all, about a 17-year-old being so mature in this type of tense moments?
Shortly, yes. Also, I would say that I have never seen a player who had such control of the tournament, because in fact he never had a losing position through, like, not even losing position, like in these 14 games he never had a worse position. So I analyzed his games a little. So the absolutely worst he had was against you in round 3, I think. Round 4 maybe, in Italian. And it was like a plus 0.35 for two moves in a row. So it was for me like very, I mean, I was shocking. I was quite shocked when I saw the game in the playing call. Like, wow, what is this, B5? When the rook is only one? So like clearly some lack of understanding of the Italian. And then, okay, a few moves ago, some very weird play, like giving away a pawn and then C5. But then I checked it, it's like, it's all very strong. Yeah, like at least starting with 97 move. So, I can say that he scored plus 4 when he was very unlucky. So his game against Alireza in round 7 was like clearly unlucky, and some touch of genius from Firouzja. I have never seen such performance, because I think Firouzja left, I think he had like 30 seconds or something, or maybe 40 seconds for like 7 or 8 moves. And, he played all the best moves, and this was just incredible, completely incredible.
This was funny, because we were looking at something before the game, and then we noticed that Alireza is like playing some bullet
on Legion. Yes.
And then after this game, we thought, okay, the preparation clearly paid off.
No, he was playing Blitz. He was playing Blitz.
And he had like three plus 0, I think. Yeah, he played some 10 games match against some, I think, Iranian strategy.
Ashraf.
He got destroyed.
Yeah, and he lost like 4-6 or 3-7. Okay, I don't remember, but okay, I also noticed that. And then, finally this preparation worked. So,
there was a switch, on Firouzja. He played not a disastrous game, but not a great game overall. Got a losing position, and then a switch came on.
But actually, it wasn't like he played. I didn't feel he played badly. The thing is, like, at some point, they both played well the game.
Yeah.
And then there's this like logical moment where at some point White should probably play like Queen C1, threaten Bishop H6 or Queen D2 or whatever, and then King H7 and Queen C2 and draw. Like, it's, but of course Alireza at this moment in the tournament didn't wanted anything besides a draw, so he started to take some risks.
No, but I believe it was quite nice for him as well. But then after A5 Queen C7, it's suddenly a fork. And after e5, queen c7, he should either, maybe he should go for queen c1 and bishop h6, blackmail with a draw. Or what he did was also, I think, more or less normal, to give away a5 pawn, but it was already sort of a bit risky, because if you don't get anything, you're just full pawn down, and not like black is suffering or having some problems. So I think starting with queen c7, some problems were like were bigger and bigger and bigger for him. Yeah, like Snowball. But then I think, yeah, okay, all this play like rookie three, then B4, then okay, I think very like this was just very cool, just one of like the best performances in a single like in a single game, especially considering his very low time. This was very impressive.
Cold, yeah, no, that's a great way to summarize it, because also psychologically, Firuja was not necessarily in the best place at that point, right? His tournament was not going great. So, but he kept incredible composure, I have to say, calculated very well, and yeah, took Gukesh out. And then Gukesh, I think it was maybe at the end of the tournament when he mentioned this after he officially became the challenger, that that was the best moment in his tournament, because he still felt very good after his loss against Alireza. He was like, okay, I'm still in very good shape. I can still do this. Like, he didn't take it. He didn't take that loss badly. He wasn't too much down on himself, if that makes sense. So that, you know, showed once again a lot of maturity, let's say, from his part.
You know, as for me, okay, I checked through, I read some of his interviews or and post-game comments, and in a way it reminded me of Chess Speaks for Itself. So no big, how to say, details, just okay. I was like very sure I'm a good player. I knew, okay, maybe it's like that's how you're supposed to answer such questions, but it wasn't too detailed. Yeah, okay, I have some good nerves, and okay, I was well prepared, and I knew if I do my best, I will win. So this is, you know, pretty normal stuff to hear, but as a chess fan, I would like to know some, you know, something more. But yeah.
What's your take on this new generation of up and coming Indian players? Obviously, Vidit is a bit on the older side, which is kind of ridiculous to say, and he's not even 30 probably. But
I think Vidit is 28 or 29. He's
29.
Close to our age.
Yeah,
quite close.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, Prague, Nihal slow down a little bit, and obviously Gukesh. What's your take on this new generation? Do they see chess differently, I guess?
I don't know. I think I answered the same question to Levitov in some podcast. So for me, it's way easier to speak about like Prague and Arjun. So okay,
yeah,
Gaisi,
of course. How could I forget about him? Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. What are they playing? How are they playing? What are they doing? So, of course, Prague is extremely talented. And Arjun as well. Okay, they have like very different approach for chess games. So Arjun is very, I think, dynamic. Yeah, like he bluffs a lot. Okay, yes, probably he's supposed to bluff a lot because he's very young. Yeah, and so on. But he's very resourceful. And okay, I felt this like when I played some blitz match against him on chess.com. Prague is, I think, very positional with a very good overall feeling of chess. And I think like he's arguably the best Italian player right now, like not the player of Italian, yeah, of Gioco Piano, yeah, not the best Italian player. Okay, sorry, Vocaturo. So jokes aside, and Nihal, Nihal is maybe a bit too focused on online and some faster time controls, but also like very, very solid, of course, very, very promising. And the only guy who's still a mystery for me is Gukesh, but I guess time will tell us something.
Yeah. What about Alireza? Obviously, he was touted, and Magnus also touted him as one of, let's say, the pre-tournament favorites, or at least that's how he saw him. And then obviously he more or less a disaster of a tournament for him. He hasn't had the best of years. His performance has been lacking in the last few tournaments. How do you see him as a player? What do you feel? Obviously, the talent is there. He's a ridiculously strong player. What do you think it's missing for Alireza?
Well, it's interesting because I think at some point he had whatever like 27-40 in 2021, and when winning half a year, he hit it like 2800.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very important when okay, then you're young and you like you sort of catch up with the wave, upcoming wave. You're shouldn't stop playing. And of course, at some point, like he would like win basically any positions. Like, okay, this rook ending with Mamedyarov on
the European Championship,
which actually brought him into 28. So it was, I mean, not like a coincidence, of course. Like he's like maybe he's just a genius. Yeah, like he's very talented, of course. But I'd say that maybe his play was not like as consistent. He wasn't as consistent player as you have to be to get 28. Yeah. And of course, he worked at chess a lot at that moment, but I think lately he doesn't look like he's working a lot. Yeah, I don't think that he had some special big preparation for the tournament. So he played pretty...
You mean for white. The candidates? For
candidates. For the candidates, of course, yeah. So I'm not sure about previous candidates. So I think he was a bit more principled in the openings. Yeah, he played some rare reminder of line. He surprised me, for example. Okay, I went on winning that game, but okay, I was very unhappy with the opening. And I just tried to, you know, to keep the equality. So he also tried some, okay, more or less well-known, but some relatively new line against Hikaru in round two, I guess. So things didn't go his way, but he came up prepared for more or less every game. He had some ideas until the tournament went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I even played against him in Bucharest 2022, and he came up with sort of like small concept or even in bishop opening. Yeah, so he didn't play Petrov. I mean, so I felt like, okay, he's like doing some work, but now I don't have such impressions. So he plays pretty much all the openings with Blake right now. Yeah, like French, Berlin, Sicilians, different Sicilians. Yeah, like with white, he started like going for some rarity. Okay, it does wonders sometimes, but sometimes it doesn't pay off. So I don't feel like he works on chess too much. And if we take into account that he's sort of focused on his fashion career, this is quite understandable. Yeah, because, okay, I mean, as for me, okay, not like I had any illusions about myself as an esports professional player, but I played many
Dota,
hours a
yeah?
day, I'd say. Dota 2. I played many hours a day. And technically, if you try to go professional, you also have to, you know, play 8 hours a day. It's basically your job. It's not some hobby. And there is basically a choice. If you give 8 hours a day for, let's say, for Dota or for whatever, and then you give it, okay, let's say eight more ideally for chess, then you will get nuts quickly. And you will go nuts quickly. So I guess basically he would need to spend some more time on the chess work to get back to his like level. But of course, he reached his sellings. So
oh,
far.
Absolutely not. I mean, he's what?
Yeah,
20,
so
21?
He's clearly capable of 28, and we'll see.
Yeah, it does feel he's a bit distracted, and surely at some point. When did you have that realization that you need to spend more time on chess in order to achieve the next level? Because at some point he will probably have that realization as well.
He would need like 5 more years, I guess.
You were around 25 when you had
Yeah,
that?
I think 25 to 26. So I think at some point my rating my live rating dropped below 27. So it was like something unthinkable for me back then. And I thought like, okay, wow, I should find another job. And then I started, and also I think it was a funny moment. I wrote to Waikanze, okay, maybe I'm okay with Waikanze B, whatever, I need any tournament to play. And they said, okay, no, the tournament is full. Like, come on, which Waikanze B? Which Waikanze, like challengers. I thought, okay, wow, that's a sign. So that's a sign. And I think 2016, I was way more focused on chess already. So still, I was doing a lot of, like, I had a lot of hobbies, I don't know, like, football, computer games, like, some quiz games, and so on, and so on, and so on. I played a lot of billiards, a lot of snooker, so it's also, I mean, basically, random day at home, I wouldn't play chess at all, so I would play some Blitz online, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then somehow, like, I started to work more and more, and I think... 2016 was first year, okay, then I saw like when Sergey won the candidates, was like, I think, a big, big surprise for everyone. And I felt like, wow, okay, it's sort of like a reachable distance. Yeah, it's not someone like 2800, like Fabiano or Giri or whoever had 28 back then. I think Hikaru also was very high on the rankings.
I wasn't considered like, okay, because I had some maybe rough years.
Maybe not yet, but you already had like 28 before, of course.
I had hit my peak, which I never reached again in 2014. But then I had some kind of rough year in 2015. And in 2016, I'm not sure that they were considering me like big favorite of candidates or something. But there were the older guys, like, okay, Vishu, Peter, and...
Vlad, Kranik, I think Vlad was
Levon.
Very...
Topalov was still there, Veselin.
Yeah, so I felt like it's not something impossible. And then I think... In a way, I was very lucky with the pandemic year because I had some good period, some good sequence of of tournaments. I won 2 Grand Prix legs, so I qualified for the candidates. But then I think I worked more or less the full year on chess. Okay, not every day, but I worked quite a lot. And I think overall my level of overall chess culture, my overall understanding maybe became... More versatile in chess in some way. So I think it was quite important. Because when you play a lot of tournaments, of course, I got a lot of experience in 2019, but sometimes your experience, you need some time to catch up to digest all the information and only when you can use it. So I got this time and it was, in a way, it was fortunate.
How did you approach this preparation in, let's call it the off season? Do you train mostly by yourself? Do you organize camps? Like, what is your approach to training?
Overall or in this period?
In this off-season period. In preparation for candidates, obviously you have some camps. But let's say there's no candidates that particular year. Mm-hmm. What do you generally do in between tournaments?
Well, I think till I qualified to the candidates, I hardly ever worked professionally because, maybe 2019, I had some... Normally, we would have some camp with Potkin, my coach for many years back then. And also, there would be some national team sessions, which were pretty much like hanging out and, playing some blitz, chatting. And, not really discussing any openings deeply. So, I mean, back then I didn't know any openings too well. I played Nidor without big knowledge. I played Grunfeld without big knowledge. Maybe Grunfeld was better than Nidor, but So for me, it was quite normal to get some bad positions out of the opening and then struggle, just like in the last candidates, I think for the candidates 2020, I managed to work first time in my life with a team. So I think Peter Leko and his, working approach helped me like tremendously. Mm-hmm. He's very, very trustworthy. He's very nice and he's like very dedicated. And this all counts a lot, I think. And of course, the overall level of preparation, what should it be like? What should it look like? Was a bit of, something... A big discovery for me, but
a shock,
a bit shocking. So how many finesses would you look for, and so on and so on. And maybe since then I became a little bit of a slave of my own preparation, but so far it's sometimes it still works. So but for now I'm not sure. So of course I'm doing some sessions, some camps, and now I'm trying to. I still feel like maybe there is something unfinished in my career. So, I try to work at chess. Yeah, what's unlikely for me, I work with my own, with engine at home. So normally I would just chill, after the big tournament. But now I'm like working several hours a day. Yeah. Not like I'm turning into Gelfand, but this is something I will never reach this level of being that professional as Boris. But I'm trying.
Yeah, no, that's very revealing, and I think it's a blueprint for a lot of aspiring, let's say, chess professional to understand that they need to put in the work. If you don't put in the work, then you're just simply not going to reach your goals. Finally, we need to talk about the match Gukesh versus Ding, you have some experience against Ding. You have a lot of experience against Ding. How do you see this match play out?
Well, statistically, Ding, I think, is nearly the only player who scores good against Gukesh. I don't know what's the connection, what's like the special thing, but I think they played twice, both times in Waikanae, and both times was a very, very easy game for Ding. So he won, and both times he was black, yeah. So, but maybe it was a little bit different, Ding. So I think it's all about him at this point. So of course, like let's say the prime Ding, we can speak of during his ambitious 20, streak.
2019, let's say 2019 Ding.
Yeah, would be like a massive favorite. I would say like 75-25. I would say, but well. I never know if he would recover from what's happening. And honestly, like even during the match, I think it was a glimpse of the previous Ding. But mostly, I mean, of course he played much better than what we saw like later, for example, this year. But it was far from his peak, of course. And I think I played him first in 2009, I guess, yeah, in some Russia China match. And I saw him making all this incredible progress. So it's more about him and it's hard to make a prediction. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, I made a good prediction that Gukesh will win candidates. It was like I think mid January during the Waikanae. I discussed like something connected to the Toronto with one of the FIDE officials. And maybe he didn't take my prediction seriously, but here it goes. So, well, here is prediction a little bit easier. So I choose out of 2 players, not out of 8 players. And, well, I think once again, of course, kids, they grow very fast. But, I don't see like anything special in Gukesh play. So I don't see like some... It's very strong, but it's not bright, so it's hard for me to bet on him. But at the same time, it's more like betting against Ding than betting on someone else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Fabi. Any final questions?
Well,
I'm
kind of interested also because, of course, we can only speculate about Ding as like a person. But yeah, it is very much also depends on his mood, let's say, or his form, because of course he's capable, certainly. We saw it, although it's been like 5 years since he showed his best, really best level, but certainly he's capable of playing really, really strong. But I was kind of surprised because you'd think that after, let's say, all the things which went in his favor, like, second place qualifying and this whole getting into candidates in first place being very unlikely to happen, and just being kind of by random chance. Yeah, I mean, it was that let's say Karjakin didn't play, mm-hmm. That he was disqualified and that Ding took his place. And then after all this fortune, you would think even to get to the match, it was an enormous fortune, yeah? That he would be inspired. That's how it feels, but instead we see kind of the opposite. That instead of some inspiration, we see what looks like lack of any motivation or something. And I'm wondering why you think that is, or what did he just feel like he reached what he was going for, kind of the highest title, and then what is there left, or something else?
Well, I think something has changed during the pandemic times, because it was I think he was expected like as one of 2 main favorites in Yekaterinburg, mm-hmm. and some people they like make fun of like I think he was on 2 weeks quarantine in near Moscow before Yekaterinburg, which was mandatory back then, I think, and something happened and he went like to Yekaterinburg and he started with 2 losses. And then it was game against you where you like pushed too hard and you a little bit returned him to the run, I think like something happened, of course, like during these pandemic years. And also, well, I wouldn't say this is motivation only. Yeah, like let's say qualifying for the match in quite a random way. But I'd say that it's also very stressful, and it's not something maybe that wasn't something he wasn't really prepared for. And as far as I know, he just started preparing. I mean, at least as he says, after the Waikanae, yeah, like hiring one player from tournament A, one player from tournament B. Like I think it was like Wahidov and Rappaport. I mean, if it's true, I mean, okay, it's even more painful for me, but okay, such is life. So of course, I think he had some help from his like Chinese friends. At least he wrote him a poem. So also was quite inspiring. But jokes aside, people are very different, and I think he's not like sociopathic, but like if he's very much like introvert. How do you call it?
Yes,
in English,
yeah, introverted.
Introverted, yeah. So maybe he's just not comfortable with all the extra attention. And as we know from his interviews, let's say, okay, I just try to imagine the time like alone in an empty room, just playing chess and nothing is happening and so on and so on. So, well, of course, I would be happy to see like the prime ring soon enough. Mm-hmm. I would say we are going more in the direction of speculating again if the champion will defend his title. So hopefully he will be. But always a thing to speculate if he won, okay, what happens then? Yeah, for example.
I think
do we play a three-way tie break?
Well, I think it's Hikaru who qualifies by being second.
For the first place we play tie break, but for another qualifying place with this equal number of points.
Yeah, we kind of hope it doesn't get there, I guess, because
I don't think it's going to get there. I think
there
was some scandal again.
Very much of speculation currently, but
like it's clear the first place kind of deserves, and then the second place, some big tie. Like neither of us had like some.
Yeah, it was Zonneborn, and then number of wins. No, but I wouldn't say this is like completely unrealistic. Yeah, so let's say I think what's his next tournament? His next tournament is Norway. Yeah?
It's Norway. Yeah. Yes, yes.
So let's imagine I wouldn't rule it out completely that he plays Norway like he played whatever Grenke. Okay, Grenke is maybe too much, but even like Waikanae would be very painful again. And let's say if he plays against some very like someone another classical tournament and the history repeats. On a scale of 1 to 10, how motivated would he be like to show up? I wouldn't say it's much above 5.
And I feel this is something that a lot of, let's say, non-chess players or, you know, casual chess fans don't understand. There is a chin element, just like in boxing, in chess as well. When you get too many hits to the chin, your chin resiliency decreases, right? If he continues, and he's had a horrendous year, I think there is, but and if he continues on that trajectory, it's going to be extremely difficult to be motivated for the match, to be motivated to do the work, the grueling work that you were just mentioning, Jan, before the match, right?
The thing is, you don't have factors. To do like some grueling. I mean, okay, yeah, you can do this thing where you spend 10 hours a day pressing the button and trying to search for an advantage where it doesn't exist. But you can also kind of invite your friends and play some blitz and take it a bit easier. Yeah, maybe you lose the match, but it's not different. Of course, yeah, it's stressful once you're in it. Yeah, I mean, you have to give it your effort during the game and at least do some preparation before the game. And it's like some massive stress for sure. But like at least the trend is that he's starting to play like he was quitting every tournament last year. Like he left Singfield Cup, he left... I forget which other tournaments, but he left like a bunch of tournaments, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before, like that, he had agreed to play.
Well, after Bucharest, I think he basically.
Oh, yeah, in Bucharest we had a special competition for the last place with him and Bogdan Diak. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like now the trend is that he's playing. Okay, maybe not successfully, but at least he seems to be willing to kind of go there. And yeah, of course, some losses are very painful, but. If he simply has one, not like he wins the tournament, but one decent result, like he has some wins and losses, and I think life will start to look a bit brighter in terms of chess for him, and he might remember that he can play very well, which I'm hoping that that's the case. I don't, it's nothing against Hikaru or anything, but I don't want to see this scenario play out again, like
mm-hmm.
in places qualifying again, and it makes the whole thing into like Well, clearly the system is not great, and actually maybe we can discuss it a little bit, but when second place is qualifying in a tournament where it's not supposed to, then clearly system is completely busted. But actually, we discussed in previous episode this whole grand, and I know we also discussed it privately a bit. This whole grand, not
The
circuit or whatever,
circuit. The circuit. Yeah, the
yeah,
Grand Prix,
the
which
circus,
is
you mean? The circus.
the circus, yeah.
The FIDE circuit.
Which, anyway, I think many people have said their opinion about it, but what do you think about this whole system for next candidates?
Strangely enough, I didn't have a problem of qualifying to the candidates. Yeah, okay. In a way, it was like a well-tested, tested by time way to qualify there. And I didn't really pay too much attention, so I thought, okay, maybe okay, this is a good substitution to the Grand Prix. But in fact, it has a lot of drawbacks. So for now, I'm trying to study like how do I, like theoretically, yeah, qualify. And I can't even calculate the points because okay, I see like someone is getting like 20 points for some random open. I mean, not so random, but okay, it's difficult to compare with some round robin, or very difficult to compare, of course, to the candidates. So imagine like the winner of candidates gets 27, I guess, or 26. And the winner of, okay, let's say, for example, Aeroflot Open, which is quite decent, but I wouldn't say not so strong, comparing to, gets 20. And for example, me as shared second in the candidates, I got 15 points, I think, and Hikaru got 17 or something. Okay, maybe I'm
I'll
wrong.
tell you. So I got 15.92, you got
Ah, you 15.
17.14, and Hikaru 18.37. So it's not really shared because
Also, okay, this is
yeah,
also
sorry.
discussable, but okay. I mean, I don't really understand how does it work. So okay, clearly, I think you need to score twice in the open tournaments, twice in the round robins, and then maybe one in K in knockout tournament, or maybe one is like just extra. So for me, it's still like a dark forest. I mean, okay, I'm just getting used to it, but so normally this system would favor someone. I mean, it's basically the analog of a rating, yeah, of a rating during the season, but it's calculated in a very weird way. I don't think it's balanced, and I would say that if we somehow make normal feed rating work, be more corresponding to reality, then we could just like abandon all these sophisticated systems like circuit and just make more decisions based on the rating. And just rating should depend on many factors, like including activity, winning the tournament, actually, yeah, getting some prize there, some top place, not only the games, yeah, because so for example, now they returned this bonus for whatever 400 elo difference, which was not there for a couple of last years, but I think this is not enough. So of course, with all my admiration to Vichy and knowing how good is he still, how good is he at chess, seeing him at the top 10 of the rating list is a bit weird because he's basically not playing chess anymore. So he plays one tournament in a year and okay, he keeps his rating, but he's an active player. Yeah, he's like deputy president of FIDE and he has like another stuff to do, but he's like still there. And
Yeah,
we have
he's no
many.
longer professional as a
Yeah, of
he's not
course.
Yeah,
as a player as a
So he can beat anyone, but does it really mean that he's still like top 10? I
Yeah,
mean,
no, I
or maybe
agree
if
with this.
Kramnik returns, I think his rating would be like 2757 or whatever. So he
Yeah.
lost a lot in his last tournament, and like and okay, so maybe
Or
drop
Gary.
him.
Get Gary back with 28-12.
Yeah, Gary will claim your rating spot.
No, but like, of course, there's definitely some problems with inactivity. But if we look at like, let's say, top 10 currently, like, okay, Magnus, me, Hikaru, you, I think it would be fair to say that like of last 4 years, we were probably four best performing players with obviously Magnus on top quite clearly, and then a bit of a mix between the rest of us. But it wouldn't be a crazy thing to say that we were like of the last few years the top performing, I don't think. And then after that, Arjun, Gukesh, Noderbeck, Ding, Wesley, Wei Yi. It's like, of course, you can definitely mix these players up a bit or some other players maybe. But it's not a crazy list. Like, there's nobody there that you think, okay, this player is not worthy completely to be top 10.
Yeah, it's not totally random, of course. But
and if we had candidates, like, let's say, discounting Magnus because he doesn't want to play, like us three that we mentioned, like me, Hikaru, and you, Arjun, Gukesh, okay, let's see if he's world champion or not. Noderbeck, Ding, let's see if he's world champion or not. And then Wesley, Wei Yi, or like, I guess it's too many already, but like Wesley, then it wouldn't really sound at all crazy or even odd. And I don't think anyone would have a problem with this as like definitely maybe not top eight objectively for 100%, but okay, yeah, maybe top 10, maybe top 12 in the world. And I don't think it's crazy to use rating lists like last 6 months, maybe waited a bit for more recent months, and with an activity requirement like 40 games in 6 months or something. Doesn't seem crazy to me.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, like even if we like, you know, if we scroll back a few months ago, we check the rating list, we would see a little bit different. Yeah. So, for example, it wouldn't be Wei Yi who played brilliantly in Lycan's AIR. So it was like one tournament with like brought him from top 25 to top 10 and so on. And many, many similar cases. Or someone playing Sharded Opening, Sharded Open, and also getting some valuable Elo points. I mean, I really want to see like a more, you know, up to date like rating system, because once again, that's also quite fair that like I think that not so high rated players who are extremely talented and you know, consistent players, but they have no chances to play in, okay, invitational tournaments. Yeah, okay, let's say like Grand Chess Tour, whatever. Okay, Norway Chess. Okay, not so many such a top tier events. But okay, let's say five of them, and they are like playing separately. They're playing in another round robins. They're playing some open tournaments, and they struggle a lot to keep their rating high or even like to increase it. But for us, let's say average performance like in the Sinkville Cup wouldn't, okay, for you maybe okay, like 28, but let's say even me like with 27, like 70, okay, I scored 50% in the Sinkville Cup last year, and I think I lost maybe like 2 Elo points or something, yeah. So if I would like win one more game, I would even increase it. So I don't know how does it correspond to reality, because for years, okay, this system was okay, objectively a bit outdated. And now it's not like we should destroy it and, you know, recreate from the very basement. But somehow, okay, I really dream of something like tennis system in chess, like when your like all your performances during the season they matter. And but okay, then we should have some different tournaments. We should make a lot of KO tournaments because okay, if you play poorly, okay, you get no points. But then okay, next day you play another tournament and okay, you have chance to earn your points. So
yeah, this is okay, but it's like I don't know if I would trust FIDE to, because okay, weighted system.
I think this sentence is good by itself. I don't think that I would trust FIDE. Like, you don't need to specify.
No, I mean like a weighted system, I think is very good. But in chess, you have so many tournaments. It's not like okay, you in tennis, you basically have the same Grand Slams for the last decades and decades, and we know those tournaments are worth the most. But in chess, like what tournament would be worth the most? Would it be some Grand Chess Tour, or would it be World Cup or some FIDE event, or would it be some open tournaments? I don't know. The way that they're doing this FIDE circuit, I wouldn't trust them to weight these events correctly, or we would end up with some guy who wins an open tournament becomes number one in the world. I don't know who it would be, but it wouldn't like, and then suddenly Magnus is like, I don't know, we understand he's the best player, but he's suddenly like something number 13 in the world, or I wouldn't be surprised that they would do something like this, you know, if they tried to mess with the weighted system. I think like the main problem in chess is that we have something which doesn't really exist in, okay, in for example tennis, which is that we have the draw. So in like Sinkfield Cup, you make 9 draws, okay, you lose your 2 points or you gain your 2 points, but nothing really changes. But if we have this, I heard it even discussed like years ago by different players, like after a draw, you have kind of, you switch the colors and then you play rapid game, and then you have a result, and then this decides the overall result.
Happening in the American Cup recently, or it was a bit different?
These are rated separately. This is like, okay, it's one classical game, one rapid game, and they're rated separately. Like this would be that the classical game and the rapid game are basically the same game. And if it's a draw, if it's a decisive result, that's it. And if it's a draw, then it goes to somewhat faster time control. Maybe not like not that we play like Armageddon Bullet, but some reasonable time control, and this decides the result of that round. But then the classical would also have to be a bit shorter to at least make it not so that we're not playing 7 hours each day, I guess. But it's an idea.
Yeah. Let's try to make some predictions for the 2026 candidates. We're going to give three spots away, you two. We're going to give the spot to whoever loses the World Championship match, even though they don't actually get that spot. But let's say,
they don't get that spot anymore.
But let's try to
give some circuit points.
Circuit points, yes. Let's do an exercise. Who do you see in the 2026 candidates? I'll start with you, Jan.
Well, if we speak about circuit points, then probably I don't see Dink scoring, playing a lot of tournaments and scoring a lot of other points this year, so this wouldn't help him. So I don't think this will affect on the circuit if Dink loses the match. So I don't know. Okay, maybe I need to go to the Wikipedia to see who is leading right now. I think it's Arjun, or maybe it's Hans, or
I can tell you, it's Gukesh in first, so this is quite important for the match. Then Noderbeck, very close behind. Then Arjun, then Mendonca, and then Hans in fifth. So this is top five.
Okay, yeah. Mendonca, yes, he won the Wycans FB, so he's in a big contention. Okay.
Oh, and he also won the Spring Classic.
Spring Classic in St. Louis.
Ah, well, okay, this I didn't follow. Okay. But he got his maximum out of round robins, yeah, and now he has to play opens, I think.
Yes.
That's true. They're not, neither is an open tournament.
Or yet. Maybe, okay, I don't even know how the system works. Okay,
don't think about the system too much. And,
yeah,
and its flaws.
Yeah, let's not think about, you know, Fide Circus. Let's think about who would play. So I think Fabiano would be still there.
Well, you and Fabi will give
me?
You guys
okay,
two
about
spots.
Myself, I'm not so sure. I have a big. It's very teasing to, you know, to finally get some rest after, you know, 5 years. 5 years.
But
period. Of,
let's assume, yeah, you two guys are chef. Still in it. Who are the other six?
Okay, you still think that I will be there? Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll give you and Fabi the benefit
nice.
Of the doubt.
Well, I think two Indian players. I wouldn't specify, but I think probably one of them are named Arjun. Another one, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe three, but okay, likely two. Okay, I don't think. I think there will be a very, very big run in the circuit and everywhere. Mm-hmm. So probably Noderbeck wouldn't surprise me there. But I'm not. I mean, I'm not sure. He's a great talent, of course, but. I think not the last role in his success plays that he's also like very optimistic, he's very fighting, but he's also very young. So okay, after he gets some experience, maybe he won't be as optimistic as he is now, and maybe this will affect his play style and maybe slightly affect his results, but of course he has a very bright future. Mm-hmm. So maybe Noderbeck. Then I'm not sure about Hikaru, so I'm not sure if Hikaru will be very active at chess, but you know, he qualified for Grand Prix to the previous, yeah. He qualified, I think, for the Grand Swiss, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so also the Grand Swiss is always, you know, somehow I have a very good relationship with Grand Swiss winners, so I scored 6 out of 6 against them. 2 points against Van Hal, 2 points against Firoje, 2 points against Vidit this year. So I really rely on someone winning the Grand Swiss, yeah, so I can, I can farm a little. Yeah, jokes aside, How many are left to
two? So let's say Hikaru, Noderbeck, two Indians,
Hikaru,
and
Noderbeck,
two more.
Me, Fabiano, two Indian players,
Eric Aissi and unknown, and two more.
Yeah. Well, I think we need Hans for the candidates.
Okay.
Yeah, to spice it up a little.
Okay, excellent.
And I wouldn't rule out, like, okay, Magnus wouldn't probably. Will very unlikely be there. Of course, he will. Maybe he will win another World Cup, you know, to grant another fourth place to his fourth place in the World Cup to get his ticket to the candidates. But okay, it could be some, you know, some joker, yeah, like, I don't know, some dark horse. So also there are a lot of, there's still like two years to the candidates, and anything can happen, and, you know, kids are growing fast.
Yeah.
So maybe some another great prodigy who is 13 years old right now, okay, who knows. Yeah, probably someone young. But okay. I would also love to see like someone like Wesley or Anish or Maxime.
Okay.
And so on.
Okay. Fabi, who are your six?
So you're saying that Jan and I are
correct.
Somehow
you're already yes.
Christian doesn't know the rules. He thinks we already qualified.
Look, this is fantasy land. We're talking fantasy land. Yes.
Is I think there's 0% chance that Ding will play the candidates. Either he wins the match or he loses, but he's not getting the candidate either way. If he loses, basically he will not qualify. Like zero chance, I think. And if he wins, then I would probably pick Gukesh. So that's a bit of a what if, I don't know. Hikaru, yeah, it's like 50-50 for me because he's still super strong. And his rating's high, so he has chance at rating lists, and he has chance at maybe winning some tournaments, but he has to play, so this is tough for the circuit. So I'm not sure he has more than like 50-50. Because yeah, this other things like the World Cup are kind of complete random crapshoot. So yeah, you can just throw a dart and maybe you'll hit three qualifiers or not. I would definitely say Arjun is like probably deserving in general, and also very likely because he's super active, so he'll probably get a circuit spot one of these years, and by rating also a chance, and by World Cup a chance, so it's not a guarantee, but I would probably pick him as my first guy. Noderbeck I would pick as my second guy somehow. I don't know how, but somehow. So I've only picked two so far, yeah? So I have to pick four more. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, could be some young guy. I mean, you shouldn't bet against the young guys in general, so Prague is like very logical, but I don't know, because Prague, his rating isn't really in contention, at least for the moment, although things can change. Circuit, maybe, but maybe not. And next year, I don't want to speculate, so I don't think I'll pick him. I think, yeah, I'll pick one of the older guys like Maxime. Maybe it's also a bit of like, you know, I like my generation. So
yeah, that's okay.
I'm
that's
still okay. Rooting for some of the guys. And yeah. Maxime has a chance because his highest level is like super high. So if he has like a good World Cup, then he's already been there before, like Final Four World Cup and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So three more. You know, like Wesley, I think, has a really good chance because all he has to do is score plus one here and there in some close tournaments, which he's super good at, maybe plus two, and then he maybe gets a circuit spot.
Mm-hmm.
So Wesley. I'll pick mm-hmm. Wesley. Okay, now I should pick a young guy because now I'm going too old. So I have one more, right?
Yes.
Okay, young guy. It's kind of tough because I don't know about Ali Reza. It says, yeah, let's also pick Hans just to have the
Hans,
enjoyment.
Okay. So both of you pick Hans. Okay. I mean, I think you might have one left.
Oh,
so,
really?
So who do you have right now? So is the two of you.
Who
are the other six?
Arjun,
Noderbeck, Hans, Wesley, Maxime. One more.
I have one more. Okay, let's go some Wei Yi, maybe. I mean,
Wei.
Yeah, of course.
That's a good pick.
Wei Yi is very promising.
That's a good pick.
So instead of the dark horse, okay, replace it with Wei Yi. It's a brilliant pick.
Okay.
No, he's very strong, to be honest.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we covered so much ground. Guys, I had a blast. Jan, where can people find you? Now you're trying, or at least you did say that this is an attempt for you to revive your YouTube channel. Tell us a bit about that. Where can people find you? What can they expect from you in the near future in terms of tournaments? You have so many fans out there. Give them all.
In terms of content creation, yeah?
Content creation, tournaments.
Yeah. By the way, I would say that maybe I don't like something about Hikaru, but his after the game recaps is very good. And to be honest, I think it's not as difficult as, I mean, of course it's difficult to get to take such a decision, to record it like you know, constantly. But I would say that anyway, I would anyway go back to my room, and for 20 minutes I will I will check my game with computer. And why not to, you know, switch on the recording and share some thoughts simultaneously.
Interesting. Okay. So should we expect that from you?
I wouldn't promise, but I think that okay, maybe Bucharest. I mean, it's some sort of a confession booth here during the event, but not during the game technically, yeah, but after it.
Yes.
Yeah, also maybe I should make some videos regarding candidates, maybe some video regarding cheating, some I was following Kramnik videos, but during the candidates, I was a bit like lost the trace. But surely, some more to come. Yeah, I think I play.
I want to say something about this in general.
Okay. But
I don't know. I've been telling myself for like mental well-being not to talk about it, because or not even to think about it. But somehow
it's like the Goodwin Law. It's the Goodwin Law in a way. Yeah. Like anyway, if you discuss chess, you will discuss cheating at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. This is guaranteed. But like even last night, I was kind of with some chess players. I won't say exactly who, but somehow this topic comes about, and then I realized like this kind of online narrative, the one that's like, okay, cheating is all under control, and we're all good. We got it. And then the like real life kind of opinion of people is more or less like. Kind of laughing to see not only the standings of tournaments, but also some of the brilliancies that people come up with. Mm-hmm. And like one comment by, okay, kind of very, not only is he not a paranoid guy, but kind of very reasonable chess player and also a top player, was more or less like after seeing one of the games in which one of our, let's say, most promising players in the world, like I'm not being sarcastic, like one of the best blitz players in the world, more or less lost without any fight, having 5 seconds against 2 minutes, 20 seconds by his opponent. His opponent playing the first line the whole game. It was like, if this is not kind of, you know, proof, then like, what is? Are you expecting to you know, handcuff the guy and catch the computer in his chair or what?
Well, I had quite some Zoom calls with just Confair Play, couple of months ago, yeah, okay. Obviously not during my preparation, but before, in the beginning of this year. And, well, what I listen, okay, first of all, we can't act based on one game, which is quite logical in a way. But then, they always want, like, as much proof as possible, which is, I mean, yeah, you will never get physical evidence. That's a big problem. But everything else is probably not enough for them to interfere.
Yeah, this is sort of a, let's say, conceptual issue, although I understand their dilemma.
It's like Schrodinger cheating, yeah? So it's there, but it's not there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough issue. Anyway, we don't have to get into it too much.
It's a tough issue, but yeah, I'm looking forward to see what content you're going to come up with, Jan, in the near future. Very excited about that. Go check it out, guys. Go check Jan's YouTube page. He's active on Twitter as well quite often. And of course, I'm sure you all will follow his games. So with that being said...
Not as active as Anish.
Not exactly, yes. No, Anish is the chess, undisputed chess king of Twitter, I guess. Yeah, if you might
unfaced,
say.
Unbothered,
yes, unchallenged, yeah, undisputed.
This as well, yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, Jan, thanks for joining us, it was a pleasure, and yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much. Take care,
bye bye.